I'd like to invite the adults up with me this morning. It's a children's sermon joke if you didn't catch it. My name is Amy Everett, and I serve as the minister to children and families here at Dayspring, and it's a wonderful gift to be with you in this capacity this morning. The year was 2001. My husband Jeremy and I were both newly graduated from Truett Seminary, and I was finishing up my master in social work. And as all graduates do, we were trying to figure out what in the world to do. Sometime during that year, we had the opportunity to visit a place called the Center for Action and Contemplation in Albuquerque, New Mexico. The center, if you don't know, or the CAC as it's called, is an educational nonprofit whose mission is to introduce Christian contemplative practices that support transformation and inspire loving action. And whatever we were going to do, we knew we wanted to do that. It was founded by a Franciscan friar named Richard Rohr. Just to paint a picture of who we weren't not only seminary grads from a Baptist university, we were both second-generation Baptist preacher's kids. So there we were in our youthful exuberance, all steeped in our Baptist heritage, visiting a center founded by a friar in a Catholic religious order. And this was almost 25 years ago, when just a few Baptists and Catholics were playing in the sandbox together, or at least that I knew of. We arrived in Albuquerque and found our way down a dusty road to a cluster of very modest adobe buildings. When we first arrived, a husband and wife team who worked at the center gave us a tour. I vaguely remember a library. I do remember a garden and a few chickens, but I vividly remember turning a corner and casually and quite literally bumping into Richard Rohr. After we composed ourselves, we really admired Father Rohr, and we were a little bit starstruck when we ran into him. But he graciously began to ask us about ourselves. I don't know what we said, but I can only assume that we shared we were seminary graduates, Jeremy had an interest in St. Francis, and we attended a small church in Waco that was Baptist, but it was rooted in the contemplative tradition. And as strange as that sounded to Baptists, I'm sure it sounded even stranger to Father Rohr. Whatever we said, I'm sure it was whatever that would legitimize us in his eyes. And he could have lectured us on any number of things: apostolic succession, liturgy or capital C church tradition, poverty and prayer, any number of things. He was certainly qualified to do so. He was 30 years our senior and had singularly devoted his life to prayer and justice. He was our spiritual elder. But instead, he took interest in us. He demonstrated a curiosity about us and listened with intent, not to mention patience. I'm sure he had other things to do. As the conversation ended, he said, and I'll never forget it, "You know what I like about Baptists? You have a deep knowledge of what it means to have a personal relationship with Jesus." His words of affirmation about a major difference between us immediately bridged a relational gap. His words conveyed, "I see you, and I believe that what you bring to our common faith and the community of Christians is of value." I thought of this experience as I sat with Paul's admonition to the Corinthians: knowledge puffs up, love builds up. It's just as surprising to me that I would choose to preach on a passage concerning meat sacrificed to idols, but here I am. The Corinthian Christians had ever-widening divisions as they learned to live with each other's cultural differences and religious backgrounds. In our reading today, Paul addresses a debate about whether Christians could eat meat that had been sacrificed to idols. In the ancient world, various temples to pagan gods and goddesses lined the streets in cities like Corinth. People brought animals to sacrifice and believed that by doing so, they'd gain favor or blessing. Some temples had dining rooms attached, and the meat would be served on various occasions. A Christian in Corinth might receive an invitation to such occasion, and often their professional duties required that they go. Think of it like a professional conference. To eat the meat was a social courtesy. To deny it was a social affront. And I learned this in studying this week. If there were leftovers from these events, temple officials would take the meat to sell in the market. So even if you didn't attend temple feasts, the meat you bought in the market could have been meat that had been sacrificed to an idol. So what's a meat-eating Christian to do? This was their question. In 1 Corinthians 8, 1 through 13, Paul agrees that it's okay for Christians to eat the meat. To convey his agreement, he echoes back to them phrases that they've used to justify their position. All of us possess knowledge that no idol in the world really exists. Food will not bring us close to God. I don't know how these letters were read in the community, but I can just imagine that those who've used these slogans that Paul quoted gathered around a table with all their meat, nodding their heads and saying, "I knew we were right. I'm so glad Paul has seen the light." But then comes Paul's pastoral punchline. Knowledge puffs up, but love builds up. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Read that again. I think Paul might be conveying something that he's not meaning to convey. The reader clears his throat. All of us possess knowledge that no idol in the world really exists. Food will not commend us or bring us close to God. Okay, yes, right. That's the line you wrote. Brilliant. And the reader continues as he did before. Knowledge puffs up, but love builds up. In another pastoral punchline, take care that this liberty of yours, meaning the freedom of knowing that it's allowable to eat meat sacrificed to idols, does not somehow become a stumbling block to a brother or sister in Christ. And a raucous debate erupts among them about how better to argue their position. Call Apollos and see what he would say, or maybe Priscilla. I know she's thought about this. And as they debate how to argue their point with more precision, one brother takes Paul's corrective to heart and quietly slips out because suddenly a young Gentile convert named Nicholas comes to mind. He hasn't seen Nicholas in a while, actually since he saw him in the meat market, and thinks he ought to check in on him. One commentator diagnoses what's happening among these Christians like this. Knowledge is a great gift. And these Corinthian Christians are more knowledgeable than most. But they have become prideful concerning their knowledge, and knowledge without Christian love tends towards arrogance. Knowledge without Christian love tends towards arrogance. And arrogance only widens the gap between people. My high school chemistry teacher was as arrogant a person as I've ever met. He berated us and called us names when we missed an answer. I was shy and would turn bright red when called upon, so he made a point to call on me every day and tease about how red my face would turn. He was a smart man. I could have learned a lot from him, but I didn't. My high school calculus teacher was as gentle and generous a person as I've ever met. Her name was Mrs. Stubbs. After instructing the group, she would slowly walk around, giving us individual encouragement or help as we needed. She was a smart woman. I learned a lot from her. They both had expert knowledge about the subjects they were teaching, but it was Mrs. Stubbs' love for each of us that bridged the gap between her knowledge and ours, and that built us into a community of learners. And various fields know the importance of tending to and maintaining the quality of relationships. If Paul had been a businessman, you might hear him say, "Lead at the speed of trust." If Paul was a social worker, he'd remind us that a positive relationship is the most beneficial aspect of the helping relationship. If Paul was a parent, he'd encourage us, connect and then redirect. But Paul is a Christ follower and says this, "Knowledge puffs up, but love builds up. Look not only to your own interest, but also to the interest of others. If eating meat sacrificed to an idol tempts a sister to return to her pagan ways, don't eat the meat." Someone recently said about the church in America, "If Paul were alive today, we'd be getting a letter." It's true. It's no secret that we live in a divisive time in history. It's no secret that many divisions cut right through our capital C church, and sometimes even in our own homes. Frankly, if Paul was to write a letter, I'm not sure he would even know where to start. But knowledge puffs up and love builds up is as good a place as any. Paul knew what it meant to be arrogantly puffed up. Remember him before his conversion? He was breathing threats and murder against Christians. He proactively sought out Christian men and women to bind and bring to Jerusalem. Until he had a direct experience with the risen Christ, was struck blind, and had to rely on the hospitality and counsel of a Christian who knew his reputation. Paul knew what it meant to be unconditionally received as someone for whom Christ died. He knew amazing grace. Paul knew love. 5 chapters after our section today, Paul writes what is often called the love chapter. 1 Corinthians 13, it's most often read at weddings. That might be your association with it. But I think it's important to remember that Paul wrote it to a church community. "If I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I am a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. And if I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith to remove mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. If I give away all I have, and if I deliver up my body to be burned, but have not love, I gain nothing. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth." This is a very practical day-to-day, person-to-person, church-to-church kind of love, and is countercultural in our day. Where in the world can we find an unconditional, self-sacrificial love like this?